Kim, the Boss Man Show, here with Matt Langle, the coach of the Colgate Raiders, here with me, the Patriot League coach. What's up, man?
Hey, how are you doing? Good to be back on. I appreciate you guys having me.
Yes, indeed. Coach, I'll tell you what, man, let me ask you this. You're in the middle of year nine, coach, leading the Raiders. What do you feel like has been your greatest accomplishment in your 9 years leading the Colgate Raiders, man?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking me that question. I think that at 34 years old, the staff and I inherited a program that was on a little bit of hard times. I think we had won just 8 games, and at the time, the school record for wins was 18 on a regular season. So I think I'm most proud that we feel like we've built a program that, is positioned well, not just for this season, but for the future, to be in the hunt for conference championships in the regular season and making the postseason a reality.
Yeah, Coach, like I said, being there 9 years in the coaching business, we and you both know this, the turnover is so high every spring. To be in one place 9 years, man, you got to have the alignment of the AD, the president, and the basketball coach to be on one accord to make sure that you can get the support to be there 9 straight years as you have so far.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that you make. We've been fortunate to – first of all, we were fortunate that the institution and the alumni and the board of trustees and the administration were patient, because we didn't turn it around, right away. We only, we didn't win 10 games in the first year, and then, 13, and it took a handful of years before we even had a winning record. The patience is important. I think that, it wasn't just for Colgate. It wasn't just about wins and losses. Those who have stayed here 4 years have all graduated, and a lot of other good things our guys are doing in the classroom and in the community. We have worked with 3 different athletic directors and had a couple different presidents. And again, I think that speaks to the mission of the institution that I'm privileged to work at. That it's not just about wins and losses. There's other things that are really important to educating young people and providing opportunities and a rallying point for both current students and alumni to support something that, hopefully you can compete for championships, but also that you're developing solid young men who are going to be leaders in their fields and their work for a while.
It's just process how sometimes you get even better so you guys can make compete for it one more time, go to the dance 2 years in a row.
Yeah, I think that the charge and how we attack off season is just that we're always trying to get better. For me first, I'm trying to be a better coach, find other people, be it people in the NBA or other college programs who, have staying over a period of time. What do they do and how do they manage their programs, act their program and grow their programs? Just so how do we improve? And so, we talk to players about that all the time. But I think if, we're not looking ourselves in the mirror as coaches of saying, how do we become better? How do we, give our guys some new stuff that they'll be excited about, or maybe tweak some of the things we do on offense or defense, based on the group that we're returning, because no college program returns the exact same team from 1 year to the next. And while we're going to return a lot of the most guys who logged the most minutes and scored the most points, but we knew we'd be a different team. So I think you start to work on some of those things of what your identity is going to be, how you keep what is really relevant to your success, but also how you, maybe make some changes based on your new personnel or the personnel that's exited. So we did that. We were fortunate enough that we had a trip to Italy in August. So we were able to take the new group across the ocean and see some things and get some practices in, which was important basketball-wise, but really start to get to know each other and see where that new leadership was going to come from and how those relationships were going to come together. Because I think at the college level, that's as important as anything. Obviously, you need to have good X's and O's and good schemes for your guys to have some success on the court. But how they get along and how they come together and how they work for one another and how hard they're playing for the guy on their left and their right, really, at the end of the day, makes all the difference.
Hey, Coach, just success so far at Colgate, how has it been for your recruiting-wise to get young men up in the tri-state area, up there in New York and Northeast, to come to Colgate and want to be a part of what you're building there that you've built over the past 9 years?
Yeah, I think, we've had a lot of different avenues of success. I mean, we're not afraid to talk about it. There's not a lot of young people across the country who, when we call them representing Colgate University and as the men's basketball program, that they say, "Oh, coach, this is a dream come true. I've been waiting my whole life to have the chance to go play go play college ball at Colgate University in upstate New York the way they might at, like, say, Kentucky or North Carolina or Duke or wherever it might be. So, you know, we've had to work really hard to find the right guys for, you know, the small school that we are. We've had to find guys who, you know, value education and are really want the opportunity to be a Division I player and work really hard in the classroom and on their academics outside the classroom. And so that's come in a lot of different ways. I mean, we've got guys from California, guys from Texas. We've had a couple, we've had a number of guys who have, we've been their second institution, meaning they have gone the transfer route that, you know, for whatever reason, it wasn't the right fit at their first school. And they come here and sat out a year and worked really hard and improved as players and gotten an inner good rhythm with our coaches and our program. So I think there's been a lot of different ways that we've been successful. You know, we've got a senior, Will Raymond, who, you know, just went over the 1,700.800 rebound mark, and he's one of five guys in the history of the Patriot League to do it. And, you know, he didn't really have a lot of other Division I recruiting. So, you know, I give him a lot of credit. He's improved a lot over his career. I give our staff a lot of credit because they kind of found him and evaluated him, and there weren't a lot of other Division I programs out there that did it. And now that we've had some success, we're, you know, we were able to sign three guys early that we're really excited about, who, you know, we'd identified as guys we think can be really good. And, you know, in past years where maybe they would have chosen another school that hadn't yet gotten to that NCAA tournament, they were comfortable going with us this year, and hopefully they can help us continue to compete at a high level in our conference moving forward.
Now, Coach, you've got 9 wins in non-conference play before you got into the Patriot League play. So talk about that, having to get those 9 wins in non-con, knowing you're going to go on the road a lot, can't get as many home games as you would like, have to travel a lot and play a guarantee too. So talk about getting 9 wins, knowing all those things, factors that go into non-con schedule and scheduling in general. To get those 9 wins, have to make you feel real, real good.
Yeah, it's a complicated process for sure. And you say a guaranteed game or two, or I'll throw out there, you know, if you look at our schedule, 3 in a row and then a fourth when we played at Cincinnati a little bit later in the season. So, a number of things go into scheduling for us. I think the first one, you know, is we've got to be really cognizant of our academic schedule. You know, with the rigors that our guys take on, you know, there's a reason that our alumni network is so successful, and, you know, the people that graduate here get such good jobs and, you know, make the amount of money that they do after school. It's because the degree isn't easy, and they learn a lot and are talented, you know, academic people. So, you know, we've got to be, you know, cognizant of not having our guys miss too much class time. So that part of the scheduling, meaning you can't always travel too far in the middle of the week, and you got to kind of balance that out. The other part that you mentioned was, yeah, we do play some guarantee games. Some of that is bringing in some, you know, significant money for the athletic department as a whole. But the other part, to be honest with you, is, you know, I don't know how you guys feel, but when I was a kid growing up, you know, I wanted to play on the biggest stage under the brightest light. That's part of what was so exciting for me about college basketball is, you know, it's not like, you know, football where, you know, not everybody gets a chance to go against the Clemsons and the Florida States and the Texases. But, you know, in basketball, you know, no matter what level you're at, you chance that if your coaches do it, that you get a chance to play in some of those games. So, you know, we recruit to that. I mean, we want guys who want to play on those stages. So, you know, the fact that we play Syracuse every year, and, you know, it just so happened that it was Clemson, Auburn, Syracuse, and back-to-back in, you know, 1 week's time, made it a little bit tough on our group. But, you know, our guys, that was one of their goals going into the year. They wanted to really be competitive in those games and find a way to win. So, you know, they were super excited that one of those 9 wins we were able to, you know, play Cincinnati at Cincinnati and get out of there with a win in somewhat of a crazy fashion. But, you know, you want to, your coach memories in that regard. And so playing those games in that non-league, and, you know, it's also preparation, meaning if you're going against the best, you kind of get exposed sometimes as to what you need to work on. And because if you're going to get into March, then, you know, you're going to be playing against those kind of teams. So part of it is getting your group ready for the season ahead, and, you know, maybe even a few months later of what's going to happen.
Well, Coach, right now in the Patriot League play, you're 9-2 now. Just got a win over Lehigh. So what's the key to that win over Lehigh? Just talk about how your team has been playing so far. You got in the Patriot League and so tough schools you play against, like American, Boston University, Navy, Army. So it's a tough league. So talk about how you guys got off to a hot start, 9-2 so far, and the win over Lehigh yesterday.
Yeah, you know, it is. It's a, like most every league. It's extremely competitive, and you know, we've done a good job. We got knocked off by Lehigh at Lehigh, pretty much. Lafayette at Lafayette, a pretty much a buzzer beater. And then, you know, we were a little bit undermanned. We had a guy out sick and a guy with an ankle. When they came back to our place, they got us again 2 weeks later. But really, you're just preparing for the next game, and so you know, whether it's a team that's that's got, you know, 3 wins and is, you know, at the bottom of the pack, or as a team, you know, after this next game at home against the Naval Academy, we'll go to Boston University, and, you know, that'll basically be a fight for first place. Everybody, when you're, you know, had the good fortune to win the year before and you've been able to position yourself, like you said, a good non-league record, and, you know, at this place, at this point in first place, everybody wants to knock you off for one reason or another. So, you know, our focus has really just been that, especially as we get into February now, that you just got to be working to keep getting better and playing as well as you can together. Because, you know, every day, as cliche as it sounds, every day matters. And, you know, every game matters to, you know, try and be there at the end of the regular season and in first place, you know, getting that goal done and securing home court for the conference playoffs. Something that's really important in our league.
And speaking of home court being an emphasis, I mean, you guys have done great at home so far. So how much do you discuss with your team about defending our home court and should we take care of home first before you go do anything else?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about it some. I think the guys are extremely proud, as they should be. You know, when I got here, you know, 9 years ago, a home game, it wasn't crazy to play a home game in front of a couple hundred people. And you know, now the institution and the student body and the local community has rallied behind this. You know, our gym doesn't really fit more than probably, I don't know, 1,200-1,300, and to have around 1,000 people at every game is significant. So I think the guys take great pride in that, in playing well at home for the fans. The other part that we have talked about over the years is, you know, as you study programs that you know, that compete for championships, not just that win one, but that are in the hunt, that are, you know, programs that are really respected, you know, in their conference and outside of their conference, they have really good home records. That just, it's really hard to beat them at their place. So I think if you develop that mindset of, you know, protecting your house and it being a difficult place for opponents to come in and win, then you're knocking out one of those really important things to being a competitive college basketball program.
Coach, last one I got for you is this. I have to ask guys this question who have been coaching a long time, so I want to ask you as well. Who have been some coaching individuals who really has helped you out in your career so far, being a Colgate and coaching business in general, that really showed you the way and give you counsel when you need counsel and help you kind of mold your program to what it is today?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and I appreciate anybody who ever asked me that. I think I was, you know, as I look back, you know, now going in almost a decade of being a head coach, I was really fortunate that first and foremost, I played for and then worked for 7 years, a coach named Fran Dunphy at the University of Pennsylvania and then at Temple University. And I learned about the business and about treating people the right way, and doing things the right way. And sometimes it might not behoove you or your program in the moment to make that choice about a decision or a direction that you're going to go in, or, you know, how you're going to, run your team or different things. And I learned that, you know, from his tutelage, both, you know, for me as a player, but also as an assistant coach. You know, my time as a head coach, as I've gotten older, there's been a number of people. I've been really fortunate to have my father represented Coach Doug Collins for a long time in his coaching and broadcasting career. So, you know, even as he's not been a coach anymore, just to, you know, use him as a sounding board of of, you know, how do you, you know, coaching is a difficult profession, and it's so cutthroat and determined on wins and losses, but, you know, how to sustain the joy of coaching and impacting young people's lives, and, you know, not to always, especially when you're in the hunt for a championship and you know how hard they are to win, that you're not just hanging on every, you know, made or missed shot or win or loss game, that you're really, you know, concentrating on your process. So, you know, a number of people in my life, some of them coaches, some of them just former athletes, some of them, to be honest with you, you know, administrators who have just, you know, been able to provide perspective, you know, as most people in coaching are just so super competitive, you know, about doing things the right way and the way that are staying true to your program and your organization and the institution you're representing, that have really been big parts of my career.
Well, Coach Langle, thank you for your time today. Best of luck to you against Navy on Saturday here coming up here. Hope to talk to you again in March when you push tickets to the big dance again.
Sign me up, man. I'll be ready to go. Sign me up.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Coach, thank you so much again for your time as always, buddy.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
All right, that's Matt Langle on the Boss Man Show.
Sally Beauty's new all-in-one hair color kits make it easy to color your hair at home. Get everything you need to color for beautifully radiant results. Loved by professionals, open to everyone. Sally Beauty.
Folks, back here at the Boss Man Show here with Mark Godfrey, the coach of the Cal State Northridge Matadors. Coach, you guys are grinding out there in the Big West, man. How you feel about your team so far?
Our team has done really well. We started slow. We had a really good player that was out for about 12 games and struggled, but then since he's been back, we've been good. So we're sitting here, I think, tied for third in the league and, you know, second half of the league getting ready to start, but we feel pretty good about things.
Now, Coach, we talked last year when you first got hired. What have been the biggest improvements in your program since you and I last spoke last year when you first got this job at Northridge?
Well, I think a lot of things have changed. You know, like right now, we're leading the league in scoring. We've defended pretty well. We're 4-4 in the league, and we're probably third, but we certainly could have been, you know, 6-2, 7-1. We've been right there in every game. So our guys have really gotten better. They've improved. They're playing hard. They've got great energy. So we just got to be able to finish this last half, you know, in a good note.
Now, Coach, speaking of improvement, player development piece, Coach, this offseason, I know your first year you want to set your culture, you know, you want to get guys used to what you want done. So in the spring, summer, and fall, what are some of the on-court and off-court things you did with your team to kind of get them prepared for this year in year two of your regime here at Cal State Northridge?
Well, we spent a lot of time in the offseason with our guys on the court. You know, you're limited a little bit by the NCAA, but you know, we try to maximize those hours. We try to get with each player individually. I think all of our players have gotten better. You know, Lamine Janae is a Big West Player of the Year last year as a freshman. He's improved his game tremendously. Terrell Gomez is a great player for us in this league, and he's gotten a lot better. So, you know, I think that's one of the things that all of us as coaches, we love to do is to help guys improve and get better with their games.
And, Coach, a piece of this puzzle a lot that gets overlooked by fans is their strength and conditioning piece, because now it's so much more layered with the nutrition piece of it, the sleep piece of it, along with in the weight rooms to keep the guys from getting hurt as well.
Well, we've hired a tremendous strength coach, Bob Alejo. He was at NC State when I was there the entire time. I think he's one of the best in the country. We've got a full-time nutritionist. Our athletic trainer's good. But sometimes, you know, the players have to accept some responsibility, too. It's like with their sleep habits and taking care of their bodies when they're not with us. But we feel like, you know, we've got a good group here that can help these guys get better. And but, you know, sometimes, too, you can't be with them 24 hours a day. And we talk to them about all that stuff all the time. And part of that comes with recruiting good players, good kids, and guys that want to get better. And we feel like we've got a pretty good group here to do that.
Speaking of recruiting, Coach, I feel like what you've been here in year two, also heading into year three here after this year, that your relationships out west, it's your foothold out west, and really help you get even better players in your program to keep your program steady and going. So how's that going out there recruiting-wise, trying to find
good. It's been good. Southern California, there's a lot of players here. There's 600 high schools in Southern California, so there's a lot of players. And, you know, our job is to find those guys that sometimes might be falling through the cracks and maybe get overlooked a little bit. We've done a pretty good job with that. But there's always good players here. We'd like to recruit the majority of our players from California. But, you know, if we have to go outside of there, we're fine to do that as well. But and we got a good staff. Mo Williams, Jeff Dunlap, Jim Herrick, all three guys that are very good at what they do. And so we brought in some good young players, and now we just got to help them get better.
You kind of live into this point about Coach Mo Williams. I know he's transitioning to coaching now from playing in the NBA all those years. So what has his experience of playing on the next level has helped you with young men who want to pursue that, as whether it be the NBA or you're playing for overseas as well?
Well, Mo's a great resource for these guys. He's a great teacher on the floor. He does a terrific job with these guys. And there's so much knowledge and wisdom that he can give to these young kids. I think it's been really beneficial for all of our players.
Now, Coach, I know you didn't get as many wins you want to in the non-con, but you have to play those guaranteed games. You don't get many home games, so having all that travel. So having your guys get 5 wins in non-con has to make you not be so happy, but, you know, your guys got through it, and they've bounced back, and like you said, the 4-4 in league play now, whatever, right in the hunt there.
Yeah, the non-conference schedule is hard here because, you know, I've been at schools like Alabama and NC State where you could, you know, you could go buy in 7 or 8 teams that you're probably going to beat and bring them into your school for home games. And here we don't have that luxury. So we've got to be the team that goes on the road. And we played a tough schedule. You know, we were at New Mexico, at Auburn, at Richmond. We were at Green Bay. We were all over the place this year, put a lot of miles in. We went to Portland and Portland State. So, you know, it makes it a little bit harder. But I also think those tough games like that made our team a little bit better. We're probably, you know, a better team now because of the schedule we played in the fall.
You got that right. And what's a thing or two you want to point out that you guys really improved on over the non-con before you guys jumped into that Big West play?
Well, I think we learned who we are as a team. And, you know, when we share the ball really well, we're pretty good. When we defend better, we're pretty good. You know, our team's one of those that when we have great enthusiasm. So I just think for us sometimes, you know, those games are difficult. But at the same time, that's the only way you get better, you know, is for somebody to expose you. And you have to learn how and what you want to get better at. So those games are very good for us.
And, Coach, you say it so perfectly yourself. I feel like it gave you guys a big boost. I feel like that toughness, that adversity that you faced non-con, even you lost some tough games in conference play as well, is really going to give these guys that bigger boost come late February and into tournament there where they won't feel like pressure or scared when it happens again. They can execute for you in the key moments there when it counts in Anaheim.
I think you're right. And not only did we play a lot of road games in the non-conference, our first 8 conference games, we played 5 of 8 on the road. So hopefully now we've got 8 left in the league. 5 of those are at home. Then we've got the Big West tournament. But not a lot that we haven't seen. We've seen a lot of different defense. We've seen a lot of different things. And I think all those things end up helping us.
And also, you're 6-3 at home, which is very important. Like you say, you haven't had many home games, but the win the ones you have at home is very important to make sure you get those wins in the ledger to help you seeding-wise in the Big West tournament and also help you if you want to play after the tournament as well.
I think so. And, you know, we've been pretty good at times. And but, again, it's all about how you finish. And we need to finish strong, finish well. Our guys, I think, are excited about it. We've got a game tomorrow with UC Riverside, and they're much improved. They're a lot better than they were last year. I think we're tied with them in the league right now. So it starts tomorrow for us. We've done half the league. Now we've got the second half, and we need to do really well this last eight regular season games.
You got that right, Coach. And speaking of that stretch, do you try to keep your young men focused on it one game at a time? Because, you know, young kids always project and look ahead. So keeping their minds on this Riverside. We're not worrying about the last 8 games. We're worrying about Riverside coming up here this weekend. Then we'll worry about that all these other teams down the road. So how do you keep those guys focused on that, Coach?
Well, we talk a lot about, you know, in our conference, there's 16 conference games, all 16. They just count as one each. That's all. Sometimes you win a big game and you feel like it counts more than one, or you lose one and you feel down in the dumps, but really they're only one each. And you got to take each game and you've got to, you know, play each game as it's the most important game on the schedule and just take them one at a time.
And coach, for you, how are you enjoying your time out there in the Big West? No, it's first time coaching the conference as a head coach out there. So how's the experience for you being the Big West, seeing all different coaches in that league and all different things you see in the Big West Conference? Why are you together out there?
Yeah, we've had a great time. Our staff has done a good job, and it's been a lot of fun. And you know, good coaches in this league. Dan Monson was at Gonzaga in Minnesota. Rod Barnes at UC Bakersfield. They're coming into the league next year. But our league's done a good job. Got good coaches, good players in this league too. A lot better players than a lot of people think. So we've had a good time. It's been fun. It's been fun to be back in Southern California. And I don't mind a 75-degree weather every day either. That's pretty good.
Coach, that's a great thing, especially today. Atlanta wins snow here today, Coach. Believe it or not, it's snow here today. Believe it or not, Atlanta.
No, that's terrible.
Yeah, Coach, it did this morning. I was like, what just happened here? So what you just said to me sounds so good. So if I was sunny every day. Yes, indeed, Coach. Well, Coach, thank you for your time again, Coach. I appreciate you coming on the show again. Hope to see you at the Final Four, Coach, as well, man.
All right, guys. Okay, thank you.
All right, that's Mark Garfield on the Boss Man Show.
How do you feel about your office? Is it just a space for your company, or is it a space to help you grow your company? From new HQs to satellite offices, with WeWork, you can find a space that works for you. Visit we.co/spacematters to learn more.
All right, Bound the Boss Man Show. As promised, he's back with us, my man in Memphis, J.C. Smith. What's good, bro?
What up?
Man, not much, man. Off Super Bowl high, man, still amazed how my man Shanahan choked again, bro. Loving it, man.
Dude, I mean, the curse of Kyle Shanahan, man. This poor guy can't catch a break, man. I mean, I'm sitting there like the rest of the country on Sunday, you know, up until what? The 7 minute mark. Quarter. Yeah. I'm sitting up there thinking, you know what? The 49ers got this in the bag, man. They had played great defense up until that point, pretty much containing Mahomes and putting that pressure on Mahomes with their front four defensive linemen there for the 49ers, man, those four first-rounders that they had. So, like, the game plan was working, man, but it just seemed like on that third down with 3rd and 15 play, where Mahomes hit Tyreek Hill deep, you know, on that, like, post-corner route. After that, man, it was all she wrote, you know, for the 49ers. As the Chiefs were able to come back, you know, from 10 down and to win that game, man. So it's got to be frustrating, got to be disappointing, you know, for the 49ers to be a 49er fan to think that you were just, you know, a few minutes away from your 6th Super Bowl in franchise history. And, you know, it's a lot of question marks that, you know, arise now after that game, boss. You got to think about, you know, like I said, Shanahan's decision-making, you know, going away from their strengths of running the ball and trying to, you know, pass there, you know, a few times, pass a little bit more than they normally were during those playoff games earlier during this postseason run, man. And also, you know, questions you have to ask about Jimmy G, Jimmy Garoppolo, mm-hmm. You know, he had his moment, you know, at 2 minute, the final 2 minutes of the game, he had a chance. They're down, you know, down four, have a chance to score a touchdown to win the game. And, you know, the spotlight was on him, man, and he did not deliver. And that, it seemed like, you know, the question marks all season long about Jimmy G, it seemed like that moment was like his moment to answer all those questions, to show that he is the guy, he's worth, you know, all the money they're paying him, that he's a big-time, you know, quarterback in this league, man. But he fell short. He almost connected on that deep pass to Emmanuel Sanders to win the game. But, I mean, I think, you know, you have to ask, like, okay, is he the guy that could get us over the hump? Yeah, we can win a lot of games, you know, with him during the regular season, you know, and he's shown with his regular season record so far that, you know, he's a more than capable starting quarterback. But does he have what Patrick Mahomes has? And Patrick Mahomes have been sticking up the joint for 3 quarters, you know, in that 4th quarter, you know, he shined, you know, when the pressure was on, when the game was, you know, at stake. Patrick Mahomes, he showed you why, you know, he is who he is. And Jimmy Garoppolo had a chance to show who he truly is. And he left a lot of, unanswered questions that have to, you know, have a lot of the 49ers fans scratching their head and in front office also as if he is going to be the guy, you know, going forward in the future.
Remember, Shanahan's like robots. Remember, they like Kirk Cousins. They like Rex Grossman. They like guys who don't go off script. But when in a big game, when you just want to go off script, you don't have it. So you want a robot as your quarterback, you're going to get a robot. You know, same thing with Matt Ryan with the Falcons. You know, you can't change the play in his offense. Whatever he calls, right. You go with it. That's why right. Matt LaFleur and Rodgers had a problem. LaFleur was like, well, let me let Rodgers change plays. Because LaFleur comes from that Shanahan tree where whatever we call in the huddle, those two plays we call in the huddle, that's what you run. You don't change what I call. And they want a robotic quarterback. So Mahomes will go off script a lot. Will not work for Kyle Shanahan. He wants somebody who he can mow and what do he says do. So part of it is their system and how they want to call the game. And so, but Shanahan, as usual, right, he tries to outthink himself. Same way he did with the Falcons and with the Patriots. He could have just thrown the ball, less. Could have run the ball, which was wrong. Just running the ball, killing them, and then you got conservative again, or you try to outthink yourself. So, I think Shanahan got a question to answer, you know, in big games here. And Jimmy G did come up short. He had George Kittle open on third down and five, but he went elsewhere. You know, but also, Chris Jones, the line for the Chiefs, he's knocking down balls like crazy. You know, at the end, they got their pass rush going. So, you know, I think the Chiefs just got high at the right time. But we come back on Houston, 24 against Houston, down 10 to Tennessee, then down 10 in the fourth quarter to San Francisco. Hey, you deserve to win that game for sure.
Yeah, you know, but like I said, you know, all that being said, you know, it was a great game. Definitely late. It was kind of actually, early on, first half, you know, it went, you know, as expected or whatever. But I really, really thought 49ers gonna win that game. You know what I'm saying? And then I tell you about those, that Chiefs comeback. You know, in the with the conference. Divisional round and also in the conference championship game when they got down big early double digits, those comebacks they came, you know, like second quarter, third quarter. But the way the game was going, you know, on Sunday, to do that in the fourth quarter, man, that was huge, man. Because I thought the game was over by that point in time in the game when Mahomes threw his second interception.
I did too.
Thought, oh, that was it. Yeah,
I did too.
You know. But for them to be able to turn it on, you know, in the final minutes like that, man, that really shows the moxie of Mahomes and what that Chiefs team is really made of, man. And you know, I seriously doubted that they could do it, you know, at that point in the game. But they were able to do it, man. And Mahomes, you know, he has like that Jordan-esque type quality to him, you know, when the game's the biggest and when the pressure's, you know, is really on, he's gonna find a way to deliver. It may not be the prettiest. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's going to get it done.
You got there right. And switching sports altogether, I saw where the young Grizzlies, Ja Morant and Dylan Brooks were disassociated. Andre Iguodala, who's decided not to mentor them, decided not to come to Memphis and be a part of what they got going on in Memphis. I can't blame him. I mean, look at the Grizzlies roster. It's a surprise they're in the AFC right now. So I know why he didn't want to do it. He wants to go for championships, not AFC and getting swept. So I get it. But are you surprised that Ja and Dylan Brooks took shots at Iggy and Steph Curry jumped in and hitting Ja and, you know, and Ja hitting back with Steph Curry? And what are your thoughts on this whole little beef we have going on here over Iggy?
I love it. I mean, you know, NBA drama, you know, the soap opera in the NBA is the best thing ever, man. Football season's over with now. Now we get the spotlight totally on the NBA. As far as Iggy's concerned, of course we know Iggy is not like this, you know, elite player anymore. He was never really elite per se. But he was a former All-Star and a guy, a great wing defender. Of course, the Finals MVP who shut down, locked down LeBron a few years back. So it wasn't like he was going to make this big difference on our team. But and I can even understand, you know, I can even understand as far as, you know, when the Warriors dealt him away and he came here. You know, I can understand at that point, you know, of not wanting to play for the Grizz, because you know. Everybody thought that the Grizz was going to be a rebuilding process, a team that was only going to win 20 games, and that was going to be it. So, of course, you know, a veteran who still think he has, you know, years left, we're not willing to waste the time on a rebuilding team. But here's where I find fault with Iggy, boss. At this point, this is, like I said, the rebuilding, this is not rebuilding program going on. This is a retooling program going on right now with the Grizz. Nobody thought that they would be able to do what they're doing, 25-25, AC in the Western Conference, a couple games up, you know, on Portland Spurs right now. Nobody saw this, so it's like one of the best, you know, surprising stories in the NBA. So I was thinking that at least Iggy would see what's going on here. And, like, you know what? I want to be a part of this. I want to be able to mentor Ja, mentor Jaren Jackson, you know, and help this team, you know, in the playoffs, you know, because at that point he said he wanted to be able to mentor young guys, and he feels like he still has, you know, a lot to, you know, give and teach. Why can't you do that in Memphis? Why do you have to go to L.A.? Why do you have to go to Houston? Why do you have to go to Miami? You know, once you see what's going on here in Memphis. You know, so if I'm the Grizz, you know, I think they're doing the right thing. You know, if this guy doesn't want to play for you and you're not able to find a trade partner and get a good deal, your guns and, you know, just let him stay out the rest of the year. You know, if he's not willing to, they say he's already received a great portion, majority of that portion of his contract. He's supposed to get $17 million this year. I think he only has like $6 million more to get going forward. So if he's not willing to kind of concede and give back some of that money, you know, for a buyout, you know, if you're the Grizz, you don't give in to him. If he's not willing to, you know, to play nice and, you know, give back something, a concession, then why help him? Why buy him out so he can go to L.A. and then you have to play him the first round? You know, you might have to go up against him. So I think the Grizz are for the first time in a long time, are making great front office decisions. Now that Chris Wallace is out of there, everything they've done so far in a year, they've hit on everything. They have not made a mistake on one thing yet. So that is like the biggest, you know, surprise in the world when you talk about being a Grizz fan and following the team for so long, covering the team, man. The fact that the front office is sticking to their guns, they're not making dumb mistakes, they're making decisions that's going to set up the Grizz to be successful for years to come. That's the most wonderful thing in the world if you're a Grizz fan. And then as far as the sniping going on and everything on Twitter with Ja and Dylan and Steph, it's awesome, man, because this next gen Grizz, they're kind of like the old Grizz. They're kind of like the grit and grind Grizz. Like, they have so much love and show so much heart and appreciation for being in Memphis. Like, they appreciate the fact of the way this town supports the Grizzlies. And, you know, they can buy into that. And John Morant, I don't see him being, you know, one of these free agents like Anthony Davis, you know, that wants to leave here after 6-7 years. Like, Ja, I can easily see Ja being a Grizz his whole career. If they build around Ja and they're showing that they're going to do that, build around Ja, build around Jaren, and build a contender and build a winner here, like, John Morant could be a guy that could be here his whole career. And, you know, I like the fact that he's showing heart as far as shooting back at Steph Curry. You know, Steph Curry telling, like, basically saying to pipe down, you know, that Iguodala's the Finals MVP, and, you know, he you can't say anything about him. Nah, the Grizz see what's going on. They see that's a guy who doesn't want to be a part of what they have going on here. So, of course, they're going to shoot back because, you know, it's grit grind, man. You know, it's all heart. You know, that's what this team, this city has been built on, and these next gen Grizz, they're just carrying that over now. It's like a passing of the torch. So, you know, if you talk about Memphis, or these guys, they want all the smoke, you know, and they are willing to clap back against any and everybody, no matter if you're Steph Curry, a Finals MVP, or, you know, you're Iguodala. Like, anybody can get this work. That's what the Grizz are saying right now.
It's one of the old promotional things that Memphis versus everybody. I remember one of the old promotional things they used to do in Memphis, the Grizzlies, Memphis versus everybody. I guess that's what it is now. If you ain't with Memphis, basically, you against us. You know, Memphis versus everybody at the FedEx Forum there. Now, bruh, it's what I think going to happen. I think Iggy and end up back with Golden State eventually after the season was over. He's going to go out to Golden State probably. I guarantee you probably go back to Golden State. Something tells me it's going to happen.
It could happen. It could definitely happen, bro. Like I said, no trade deadline. It's Thursday. I mean, I'm tuned in, man. I cannot wait to see what happens. And like I said, it's a lot of other stuff going on also in the league as far as trade deadline. Like, what's going to happen with Clint Capella in Houston? Are they going to deal him, you know, to a contender, to another team? And also, you know, the Timberwolves are making some real
Robert Covington, my boy for TSU.
Yeah, you know, what's going on with Covington, man? What's going to happen with him? And then also, you know, Timberwolves are trying to get D'Angelo Russell from Golden State. They're trying to, you know, pair him up with Carl Anthony Towns in Minnesota, man. So it's going to be a lot of intriguing things going on.
Drummond, Derrick Rose, yeah, Luke Kennard, John Collins with the Hawks, Evan Turner with the Hawks.
Man, it's a lot, you know. Normally, it's a lot, you know, a lot of buzz about what's going on, what's going to happen in the trade deadline. And then a lot of years, you know, we don't really get much action. I think this year we're going to get some action, boss. I think it's going to be some notable names being moved, you know, and guys being moved, contenders and teams getting rid of guys to shed salary, you know, to make moves in the future. I'm excited about Thursday to see what happens.
Bro, I think the NBA made a mistake. You know, when the trade deadline was doing, like, after the All-Star break, I think what the NBA panicked that year, the Cousins got traded during the All-Star game. They panicked and moved it up 2 weeks. Because so teams don't know if they buy or sell still, if you ask me. They don't quite know yet. They kind of that no man's land. But you give them two more weeks, they'll know. But they panicked after that Cousins incident. And now it's 2 weeks earlier. Teams don't know whether they really buy or sell right now, if you ask me, bro.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of teams is kind of, you know, in that mix right now. You know, but like I said, I'm ready, man. I cannot wait to see what happens on Thursday, man. You know, with Iguodala, with all these other guys also. NBA, man, you got to love it.
Yes, indeed. Well, bro, hey, last week said me, look here, bro. This, you coming back, generated to get this 79,100 listings to your segment returning, brother. So, brother, you were missed. I'll tell you that, brother. The people missed you, man.
Hey, man. Hey, boss. I'm back, baby. 2020. I'm back with a vengeance. We're going to do big things in 2020, man. Look out. You might see the JC Boss Man show coming to a radio station near you, man. You just never know, man.
You never know, folks. Never like my man said, bro, hey. Hold it down in Memphis, bro. I'll see you March the 7th, bro. I'm coming to Hawks, Grizzlies. I'll beat the fans for them, bro. I'll see you, man. Can't wait for that, man.
Man, let's get it.
No doubt, folks. My man, JC Smith, on the Boss Man Show.
Grab a hold of Big Breakfast flavor at Hardee's. Try two breakfast sliders for just $2.99. Get Applewood smoked bacon or freshly grilled sausage with fluffy eggs and golden melty cheese all on a toasty little bun. Good morning, start at Hardee's. Available now for a limited time at participating restaurants. Tax not included.
Folks, back on the Boss Man Show. Time with the Boss Report with my man, Bone. Bone, way is good up in the New Jersey tri-state area, my good brother.
Ashley. My man, Boss Man, it's seasonably warm up here, so it's not bad, and I'm happy that I'm back for a second week, happy to have my contract renewed. I know there's a certain person in the great state of Milwaukee that doesn't want to hear that, but I'm glad to be back.
Yes, indeed, and Bob, before we get to the Boss Report part of the Florida Boss Report, what's your thoughts on the Super Bowl this past week with Kansas City coming back on the 49ers and Shanahan choking like somebody else we know again?
Yeah, that choke job is real with Shanahan. You got to figure it was already against him because, first of all, he's Kyle Shanahan. He has a penchant for blowing leads in Super Bowl. And second, I just realized that about midseason that he had Wes Welker on his staff. And we all know, if you're a football fan, Wes Welker is the anti-Lombardi. Wherever he goes, his teams do not win Lombardis. So they already had it in for them already with that fact. But then you throw in Jimmy G doing Jimmy G things in the fourth quarter, and they're just doomed.
Yeah, they were doomed, and Patrick Mahomes did what he did. You know, I'm not the biggest Patrick Mahomes fan in the world for other reasons, but yeah. I'm glad the Big Red got him a title. Andy Reid's a cool guy. I like him.
Oh, yeah, and Andy Reid is one of the wokest guys in the NFL. In a league that is full of the same whitewashed retreads, and Andy Reid is real, and I love Andy, so for that I'm not that mad. But as a Broncos fan, I could never root for the Chiefs. I could never appreciate Mahomes on the field. As you said, you're not a fan for other different reasons. And I, you know what? There are some things that I'm not a fan of either. But and I don't think that he was also MVP either. He was not the MVP of that game. So I know it's a QB-driven league. So obviously he got the MVP award, but he didn't deserve that MVP award.
Should have been Damian Williams.
Exactly.
I'm with you, brother. And postscript of that was the idiot president did not know that the Kansas City Chiefs plays in Missouri, not Kansas. Congratulating the great people of Kansas on the Chiefs winning. What a dodo bird.
Yeah, and I hope your listeners realize when I said in the opener, the great state of Milwaukee, I was taking a shot at our president and our president junior in Milwaukee. I know Milwaukee is a city. I wasn't saying Milwaukee is a state by accident. It was on purpose, listeners. So don't think that I'm a Trumper. So I'm not, so please.
And where did Trump move to, Bone, officially? Where did he move to?
Well, if you ask me who Trump Jr. is, Trump Jr. is now Milwaukee.
Well, where did Trump move to officially now?
He's down in Washington.
Now he moved to Florida officially, so he's Florida man.
Right. Oh, that's
so,
right. So
a Florida man mistakes team state in victory. Congratulations, tweet.
That was a great segue. I apologize for butting in. That was a tremendous segue, and I messed it up. I apologize.
It's all good. It's all good. So it works right into the show. Florida man, mistake state, football team wins in a horrific tweet. That's a story that I just made up on the fly because the dodo bird moved to Florida officially now.
That is correct. That is a great point.
Yes, indeed. Well, folks, you've been waiting on it. It's time for it. It's here. It's the Boss Report. First story, Bone, is this. Oldie but goodie classic. Florida man arrested after Walgreens was giving a prescription for some Viagra. In return for that, he cuts off his junk, shoots the pharmacist down because he wouldn't give him any Viagra.
But he wouldn't give any Viagra, so he gunned down his poor soul.
Yes, he cut his own junk off after he shot the pharmacist.
I don't understand, like, the rationale of these Florida men that cut their own junk because they're mad at someone else. I will never understand that fully, or at all. I'll never understand that rationale where you're so pissed off at someone else that you will mutilate your own self. It's not as bad. He guns somebody down. That's tragic. But then they cut up your own junk. I mean, so you're already going to jail, and now you're going to jail without anything down below.
Yeah, you have a bag to use the rest of your life, my man. That's horrible. So, yeah, not good. Florida woman arrested after smearing dog crap on her fiance's face after he wouldn't take out the trash.
Oh, kudos to now being a Florida woman. So we are all about equality here. So a woman gets on the show. I want to know, did she use her own hands? Did she use like one of those doggy bags or like what?
She used her hand. That's gross. She used her hand.
That's gross. So you're mad at the guy being like filthy and pigsty because he won't take out the trash, yet you use dog feces on your hand. So you're kind of defeating the purpose of being clean and organized in your own house.
Exactly. Does not add up one bit. She threw me with that one. Florida man flees cops so fast after robbing a Winn-Dixie. Some of his clothes came off. Police identify him via DNA on his dirty, bloody sock.
A dirty, bloody sock? What was he doing with his sock? That was so bloody.
Maybe to run on the rocks, maybe running on the ground. I don't know, man.
But wait, he ran so fast his drawers came off?
Yes, everything came off.
Yeah, you know, with that kind of speed, if Al Davis was still alive, he would find him. Jerry Jones might sign him, though. If Jerry Jones gets that kind of speed where you run so fast your draw come off, Jerry Jones might get you a deal.
Yeah, he might get a deal. And, you know, that's crazy. He was truly blowing the wind. He truly was blowing the wind for real. Like, my man was out there. Man, oh, man. Get this. Florida man uses Wisconsin woman's debit card information to buy pizza at Pizza Hut.
You know what? This hits close to home, all right? Because about 8 years ago, I was a victim of fraud. And when they called me about the fraud and they showed me the receipt, I was indeed a victim of a dude going to some outposts. He went to Pizza Hut. He went to Walmart. So it kind of hit close to home with that. But this dude, these idiots, they're going to go buy pizza with his stolen card. The dude that got me, he did it in Kentucky. So he wasn't necessarily a Florida man, but I guess it's close enough. These idiots, don't they know that things get tracked now?
Especially these damn chips they got in these cards now. Like, come on.
Exactly. And you go, I mean, if you're going to splurge, why is Pizza Hut atop your list?
Exactly. Try something better. It has to be something better than that.
Be a better thief. Really, be a better thief. Come on.
Get this. Florida man pumps 30 gallons of gas into cockpit of fishing boat rather than the gas tank due to, quote, unseasonably warm temperatures and meth, says no word on whether he tried to steer the boat back by climbing to the fuel tank.
So he pulled all the gasoline in the boat?
Yes, not the gas tank. Oh,
dear Lord, I hope that guy had a cigarette with a cigar on him, a lit one at that, because that would have been a lesson learned indeed.
He said he had meth due to hot temperatures, excuse me, hot temperatures in Florida. This is the '90s.
That's the key word. When you're talking about Florida man doing dumb stuff, you got that M word in there. Oh yeah, it makes a lot of sense now.
Get this. Anti-Trump Florida man likes to protest with his F. Donald Trump golf cart outside of the most Republican Florida villages. His FTD golf cart features signs such as Hitler and Trump have the same DNA. Trump is a sexual predator.
Huh. So this guy was going on with anti-Trump stuff?
Yes.
And he's doing it in Florida?
Yes, he is.
Ooh, that boy better be careful. That is Trump clientele. That's his people down there. That boy better be careful, man.
Yes, indeed. Now, Bone, last week we talked about the folks in iguanas last week. Remember, we talked about that last week.
Yeah.
Another story. Here we go. Entrepreneurial. Florida man turns its rain frozen iguanas situation into, hey, everyone, who wants some of my delicious iguana broth? This is like chicken soup. He's selling iguana broth now.
So he's boiling these things alive because he doesn't know these iguanas aren't necessarily dead yet. They're just like in a
deep
sleep or something. He's boiling these guys alive.
But they get this bone. They came with life in the water because they were so hot.
Oh, my goodness. That is amazing. And that reminds you of the story last week, right?
Yes!
And they came alive in the car, right?
Yes! Beautiful. You put them in the boiling hot water, they're going to wake up. They're back in temperature again.
Yeah, they're like, oh, shoot, what's going on here? And they try to bounce out of there.
Boy, why my state? Why?
Oh, goodness.
Get this. Florida woman arrested for punching neighbor that invited her kids to the birthday party of their daughter.
So she punched the neighbor because her kid didn't get an invite?
Yes.
You know what? I've seen that stuff up here in New Jersey, in Patterson, and Newark, and Irvington, East Orange. So it's not exclusive to Florida. But it does sound like a Florida thing also, because down there it's almost lawless down there. It's ridiculous.
You got that right. Get this: Florida man arrested after swallowing a bag of meth, stealing a patrol car, and crashing while fleeing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry, the audio caught me saying yes under my breath immediately. So when you say meth, it means something, man. It's just popping off. I love when meth involves these stories because it makes things add up. It makes things more sense. Even things that are nonsense and don't make sense, it makes sense when it has meth involved.
Yes, indeed. And get this. Florida woman opera singer sings on top of SUV and proceeds to drive through the gates of Mar-a-Lago and get shot at by the cops.
So wait, a lot of things right here. See, I know I said things about don't make sense. This right here, so she sings opera, right? So you might
on top of an SUV.
She might have a little class to her if she sings opera, right? But then you take the back of a pickup truck.
Yes, through the gates of Mar-a-Lago, they get shot at by the police.
What ilk is she? What ilk is an opera singer? If you want
to less seasoned, the less seasoned type.
Ah, that's interesting. That's very interesting. Because I never really hear stories about the other ilk getting shot at, and they could do the most grimiest thing. And have firearms on possession and never get shot at. So that's interesting that he actually got shot at, considering who she was. But the story that makes sense at all is the fact that she's singing opera and she's out of a pickup truck. Is she a traveling circus?
That part I do not know, bro. That part I don't have on that one, but yeah, that was pretty wild there. And, got two more for you. Florida man gym teacher arrested for farting on students and, quote, I want to show them how gas works.
Ha! That reminds me of the story about Antonio Brown doing the same thing to his doctor. His same doctor that checked him out. So, he's teaching like a lesson on gas, huh? The gym teacher.
Yeah.
Why don't you just roll out some balls and tell the kids to go play? Why are you farting on my kid? I swear, if that was my son's gym teacher, I'm coming down there and I'm catching a case. I really am. Why are you farting on you kids?
It's crazy, right? Like, that's just out of control. And the last one I got for you is Florida man arrested hunting frozen iguanas caused a school lockdown because he saw the frozen iguanas on the trees and hanging, trying to shoot at the trees on school property and got caught in lockdown.
He's shooting at iguanas?
Yes! Knocked off the tree.
You know what? Gun violence is terrible. Gun violence on school grounds is even worse. But this fool is actually shooting at iguanas, like lizards. Like, he's shooting at reptiles. On school grounds, there's gotta be something involved. There's gotta be alcohol. There's gotta be meth involved in that story. It's gotta be. I'll accept that as a reason.
That is out of control, man. That's out of control. So, Bone, what is your take on today's boss report, man? What have you heard today that's really gonna stick with you?
It's always outrageous when you hear about meth involved. I like that. And anytime meth gets involved in one of these stories, I feel warm inside. Because it's just all right in the world. you know, the iguana story is cracking me up. I mean, because I know I'm not even from Florida, so I knew about the frozen iguana. So I'm not even from the area, and I know what that means. Come when you get cold weather and they freeze up and almost getting like almost like a state of shock. But I know this. So how are these Floridians not knowing this and they're panicking at this?
Or you're trying to hunt them off the trees at schools, or you're trying to cook them as chicken soup, and they come alive in the boiling water, and it freaks you out. Like,
these
what are
Elmer
you doing?
Fudd wannabes. That's amazing. They're hunting iguanas. They're very, very quiet.
Oh, my God. My state never disappoints, man. Never disappoints my state. Man, oh, man. Florida. I would say do better, but I need to keep doing what you do. I need show content, so keep doing what you do, Florida. Please, don't ever change. Please.
Right, really.
So,
Florida, stay you. Be you.
Thank you. Be you. So, folks, Boss and Bone, Boss Report, we out.
And if you don't know, now you know. You know.